You cannot speak of faith. You speak of faith, you're going to lose your job, or at least you're going to be at the center of a controversy. But you must speak of your sexuality, particularly if it's of a perverse nature that the left embraces. What do you think?
The article was a hit piece, and Kim Mulkey got out in front of it, and she's being demonized because the left has so much hostility for heterosexual Christian Americans.
We're seeing in the news Sean Diddy Combs, all kinds of accusations, some of which seem to have sort of Me Too overtones, others suggesting a pedophile kind of activity. I'm interested in your take on that.
You know, many of us have been saying that Hollywood has leaned into sexual compromise to control its stars, and that many of the stars are groomed as children, as child stars. God knows, like, in order to acquire some of this great wealth that everybody's chasing, there are things you have to do that will not allow you into the kingdom. And I think Hollywood and the music industry are great examples. Everybody wants to be famous. Everybody wants to have all of this money. Well, you're going to have to sacrifice your soul to get that. That's the way that those industries are run.
Welcome into another episode of Ideas Have Consequences, and I'm delighted to have with me today a very special guest, and that is sports writer, cultural critic, activist, and host of Fearless with Jason Whitlock on Blaze TV. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for having me on your show a few times. And listen, I want to jump right into the fire right here, something I think you're used to. And that is, we're seeing in the news Sean Diddy Combs. He has been arrested, all kinds of accusations, some of which seem to have sort of Me Too overtones, others suggesting a pedophile kind of activity. I'm interested in your take on that, but I'm also kind of wondering if you think this is kind of the, you know, kind of a case of, you know, the one roach you see, there's 100 behind the walls that you aren't seeing. What's your take on this?
Well, Larry, I think you slightly misspoke. I don't think he's been arrested yet, unless it happened this morning and I missed it. I think his home's been raided.
You are correct. Yeah. You are correct. His home was raided, and while he was about to go to the Bahamas, and you know, they took his phones and this kind of thing. Thank you for the correction.
And so the way I've been exploring this whole deal, there's been two lawsuits, one by a woman that was quickly settled. I believe her name was Cassie, and within 48 hours of her filing, he settled with her. And then there's a second lawsuit from, I believe, a guy's name's Rodney Jones. And man, the allegations in both are explosive, but in the second lawsuit, very explosive allegations of shootings and or murders covered up, allegations of rape and sexual abuse. Allegations of wild parties that involve perhaps the sexual trafficking of young girls. And where I've taken my conversation and just look at this is that I think many people have long known that the music industry was corrupt, that it was, you know, a criminal and exploitive industry. And I think that what we're seeing with Diddy and these allegations in lawsuits and the raid is just like we're pulling the Band-Aid back, and we're actually going to see just how red that sore is and just how nasty it is. Diddy, you know, in my view, not the most talented guy, installed, mentored, discipled by people in the music industry. And he operates in a criminal and perverted and somewhat ritualistic way of leveraging the artist and other people through sexual compromise, you know, quite similar to what many people believe Jeffrey Epstein was doing in the political lane. And there is a political connection to Diddy. He's hardcore Democrat Party supporter and owner of Revolt, or used to own Revolt TV, and had that show The Breakfast Club, which is basically a, you know, a talk show that's a gatekeeper for young Black people to make sure they stay loyal to the Democrat Party. And so, you know, Diddy's connections and involvement in politics and in influence in the culture are quite deep, and we're getting a look at how he's able to do that and what tools he uses to influence the culture.
Can your savings weather an economic storm? Think about what you've put away for the future. Inflation can render cash worthless. Real estate can crash like in 2008. Economies built on a mountain of debt can fall like a house of cards. There are very few physical assets you can invest in that can stand the test of time. Gold has withstood as a valued form of money for millennia. It's why people are flocking to it now, and why Birch Gold is busier than ever. Through a little-known tax loophole, Birch Gold lets you convert a retirement account into a tax-sheltered IRA in physical gold. And the best part is, it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. To learn more, text IDEAS to 989898 and claim your free info kit on gold. Let me ask you this again. Can your IRA or 401k weather an economic storm? If not, call the people I trust, Birch Gold. Text IDEAS to 989898 and secure your savings today. Now, the wild parties and the groupies and the women coming and going, we've come to expect that from the music industry. That part, I don't think, surprises anybody. But yes, this is delving into a realm, accusations here of, as you say, of rape, of child sex trafficking, of non-consensual activities that are taking place, and also with minors. Do you think this is widespread in the music industry?
Yes, and I think it's been widespread for a long time. I just think our understanding of, look, Larry, I'm 56. You're around my age. If we go back,
I'm 56.
Yeah. If we go back to the reputation of musicians throughout our entire lifetime, has it not been? Would anybody be shocked to learn that some rock star, some R&B singer, was dating a 15-year-old girl? I don't think anybody would be shocked by that. Has anybody seen
Jerry Lee Lewis?
Yeah. Has anyone seen the movie Almost Famous? Anybody know Elvis Presley's dating history? Did anybody follow the R. Kelly trial? And so this has always been there. But now, instead of just kind of looking the other way and just saying, you know, rockers and musicians will be musicians, now we understand it as sexual exploitation and, you know, the leveraging of minors and the exploitation of minors. And so we're calling it rape now. And I think it's accurately called that, but it should have been called that a long time ago. So, yeah, do I think it's widespread and pervasive? Yes. I've known enough musicians, particularly in the rap music industry, and I've watched enough movies and read enough books. If you read Hunter S. Thompson and what he used to write about the music industry, is pretty consistent with what these allegations are surrounding Diddy.
Do you think this is the connection? I mean, the real point of contact of brotherhood, as it were, between the music industry, Hollywood, and the Democrat Party?
Yes, I think we're getting a look at that connection and how they work together. I think that, you know, many of us have been saying that Hollywood has leaned into sexual compromise to control its stars, and that many of the stars are groomed as children, as child stars, and that Hollywood has kind of normalized a level of pedophilia that absolutely should not be normalized. And it's just kind of commonplace. But we're in this era now where we can talk about these things honestly. And I made this point to Glenn Beck last week that it's made me think about just how consequential, and I think any president is consequential, but Donald Trump has legalized us to talk about everything. Things that, if you talk about that, you're an idiot, or you're a conspiracy theorist, or you shouldn't talk about those things. We're now in position to where we can talk about everything. And so that's why people are talking about everything. That's why the Cat Williams comedian character did the interview on Shannon Sharpe's podcast and really got this ball rolling of like, hey, man, here's what's really going on in Hollywood. Here's who they're installing. Here's how you get installed. Here's what you have to do if you want to make it to the top of the industry. And you must be sexually fluid to make it to the very top of these entertainment industries. And there's different reasons. There's, hey, you're part of our crowd, you're sexually fluid, but also if we can get compromising sexual information about you, we can now control you. And so what I've been arguing, Larry, is that we'd love to talk about, so-and-so has FU money. And what I'm arguing is, no, they actually don't. They don't give you FU money. They give you F me money. And that gives them the right to screw you over whenever they want. And so here's $30 million or $50 million or $100 million. But we have so much dirt on you that we can always control you. And Kanye has alluded to some of this in interviews. You got to put all these things together. But it's like Kanye in an interview talked about the rap industry and talked about some of the rappers and how they can control them because they've committed murder. And he says, they can't control me because I've never committed murder. And his inference is they know that some of these rappers have done crimes that they can be put away in jail for. And so we can control what they say, when they say it, how they say it, what they support, because they all live in fear that we'll release this dirt that they have on them and put them in jail. And Kanye's saying they can't control me because I just didn't commit those types of crimes. And so I think the Bible speaks of this in great detail about the worship of money. And the strings that come with having great money. I think that's why the Bible says be easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to see the kingdom of God. It is because God knows, like, in order to acquire some of this great wealth that everybody's chasing, there are things you have to do that will not allow you into the kingdom. And I think Hollywood and the music industry are great examples. Everybody wants to be famous. Everybody wants to have all of this money. Well, you're going to have to sacrifice your soul to get that. That's the way that those industries are run.
How do you explain figures like, say, a Charles Barkley? Here I am. I'm sitting in the state of Alabama. I'm an Alabama fan. Roll Tide. And yet, in this state, Charles Barkley, has been respected by both sides. I mean, he's an iconic figure, a down home figure in the state of Alabama, and yet we have seen him recently, making these huge moves to the left. How do you explain that? What do you think's going on with that?
I want to be transparent. Charles Barkley and I, for many years, or we're friends and communicated regularly. And I still consider Charles a friend, but I do think he's moved in areas politically. And I've been defined as someone who is an enemy of the left and the more progressive movement. And so there's far more distance between Charles and I. But I just want to add that into the record. But having known Charles and having when I worked at ESPN the last time, we did a long profile story on Charles Barkley that I was the editor of. I worked directly with the reporter and was involved with the conception and the execution of a very long profile story that captured Charles Barkley and his Alabama roots. And at that time, this is, let's say, 2014, 2015, Charles Barkley could be defined as someone who was defined by Booker T. Washington's influence over the state of Alabama. Charles grew up in Alabama, Leeds, Alabama, went to Auburn. Mama raised him in the church. Grandmama raised him in the church. He was what I call a Booker T. Washington type person. As he has continued to elevate in the media industry and getting this last contract he got from TNT, I believe it came with stipulations that, you know, he had to be more left-wing friendly, and he has to bow to the alphabet group, the LGBTQ group. He has to celebrate and promote that. And look, he may have already leaned that direction, perhaps because of family members or friends that he had, but he has gone out of his way the last 5 years, I would say, to celebrate the Alphabet Mafia and the LGBTQ, and to pivot away from being framed as a conservative. And I think that is just, he's paid an enormous amount of money to talk about basketball. You know how unimportant it is to talk about basketball, and they're paying you $20, $30 million a year to talk about basketball? He's being paid an enormous amount of money, and there's some strings that go along with that. And so I think he's had to move away from perhaps his instincts and or lean into things. Again, this whole sexual thing and sexual fluidity thing is just very important to the entertainment industry. And I just don't think you can get paid the kind of money he's getting paid without bowing to the Alphabet Mafia. So he's done that.
Yeah, he really has. And it's disappointing to those of us who have followed his career from the, you know, from the early 80s straight through. And he's, maybe this is a little bit of a stretch, but he's almost been a little bit of a, you know, a Will Rogers, you know, kind of figure with his, you know, kind of down home common sense that he has often brought to his commentary and efforts, at least in years past, to bring him into controversies. He has often avoided those, again, with a certain measure of common sense, but that has changed. And you're I'm pretty confident he hasn't killed anybody. So you're wondering what it is, what is the leverage they have over him? Well, I guess from what you're saying, it's the money. It's just the money.
It's two things. It's money. And it's the other thing, it's totally connected to this. To some degree I'm speculating, but there's a lot of information out there about Charles. Charles has previously probably lived a sexually promiscuous life. And so sexual promiscuity is another tool of control. And so when you're running in that Hollywood crowd, you're running in that celebrity crowd, and you're screwing and banging anything you can, and you're married, like I believe Charles still is, they can very easily compromise you through sex. And again, if you like to drink, if you occasionally like smoke weed or use drugs, it's very
easy. Or gamble.
It's very easy to get you in a situation to where to take. And again, I can't say this has happened to Charles Barkley, but we're talking hypothetically and just how easy it is to compromise someone. Take Lawrence Taylor years ago when he got caught up with an underage hooker. He didn't know she was underage. He ordered up a hooker. Hooker came to his room. She happened to be underage. And the next thing you know, he's in all kinds of trouble. Again, when you live a sexually promiscuous lifestyle and you like to drink, you like to maybe use drugs, it's very easy for you to wind up somewhere you have no intentions of being. And the next thing you know, it's a 16-year-old girl, or I mean, even could be even worse. It could be a 16-year-old boy. They dressed up like a girl that they have pictures of you with. It's very easy. And having worked in the media business, I can't say that I was ever put in that position, but I could see them trying to throw women as banana peels at me when I worked in television, and trying to put me in a position where a woman could accuse me of having done something inappropriate. And so I've given you examples of potential underage girls or stuff like that, but look how easy, all it takes is an accusation to bring a man down. And so if you're really sexually promiscuous and you're used to having sex with people you barely know, it's nothing for that woman to turn around a year later, 10 years later, and say, no, we didn't have consensual sex. You raped me. And if you liquored up high when you met this woman or anything like that, what's your real defense? You're not going to sound as confident as a Brett Kavanaugh when they bring those type allegations against you if your reputation is you're a partier and you're highly sexual promiscuous. You've been arrested. I think at some point I got stopped by police. We're drinking and some woman was giving him a there's all kinds of ways. And this is, again, why I talk about on my show. I talk about myself. I had to clean up my own behavior because I was certainly putting myself in positions where people could accuse me of things that I did not do, but my defense would not be very strong because of how bad my reputation was and because, I was putting myself in compromising positions. You can't go to Vegas as often as I used to like to go to Vegas and hang out at pool parties and drink and do the things that I was doing without putting yourself in a compromising position. These guys you think with the wrong head, and it's very easy for someone to trap you.
The information that I'm about to share with you might shock you. Right now, there's a silent epidemic affecting 100 million Americans that nobody wants to talk about. It's called fatty liver. We throw everything at our livers. Cholesterol, alcohol, toxins, heavy metals, statins, cigarettes. That's why so many of us have a sluggish, fatty liver that makes us gain weight and lose energy. Fatty liver also affects our sleep quality and may be a risk to our heart health. That's why it's important to start protecting your liver today. You can do so with Liver Health Formula. It's an all-natural supplement which contains 11 clinically proven botanicals that help recharge and protect your liver. This company has already helped more than 2 million fellow Americans with their products. You can try Liver Health Formula and receive a free bottle of nano-powered omega-3 to keep your heart healthy. Try Liver Health Formula by going to getliverhelp.com/Larry and claim your free bonus gift. That's getliverhelp.com/Larry. Jason, this, your willingness to bring up, your own mistakes, you've talked about them at some length on Twitter, on X. I can't quite get used to the name X, but I've really appreciated that. You've been very open about your faith. You've been quite transparent. You haven't approached these issues, in my opinion. I haven't sense that you've approached them with a self-righteous attitude. Instead, what I see is a guy who's approaching it from the standpoint as a man who's made mistakes, who admits that he's made mistakes, and who has found redemption in the person of Jesus Christ. What would you say, what was your literal coming to Jesus moment, your red pill moment, to use the phrase of the day. What happened for Jason Whitlock?
The second time I worked for ESPN in 2013 to 2015, I was attacked so viciously by the left, and saw things written and said about me that were so preposterous and so out of context, that it humbled me to a point and made me fully realize, like, man, what is so awful about me that they would attack me in this fashion? And so I was in denial about who I was, and wasn't denial, a strong word, but maybe I was just clueless and so awash in money and having fun, or what I perceived to be fun and fame, that I was just clueless. And I didn't understand that a lot of my values were biblical, and that a lot of the things that I wrote and stood for as a journalist were biblical. I didn't recognize it, but the left did, and said, this guy's got to be destroyed because he's stupid, but man, is he smart. He's actually he doesn't even know that he's really, really on Jesus' side. And again, I always consider myself a Christian. I was raised in the church, baptized and all that. But I was clueless that the work that I was doing was so antagonist to the secular left that, but what happened to me in 2013 through 15, working at ESPN and seeing the attacks, made me go, holy cow, if I don't get right with God, they are going to destroy me. That God, Jesus Christ, is the only thing on my side. He's going to be my only salvation, because I can't rid myself of the things that I believe. I can't rid myself of the values that were instilled in me as a young boy in the church, 25th Street Baptist Church in Indianapolis, and my grandmother. I'm not going to reject those values. I'm always going to stand for those things. And and then I realized, well, if you're not going to give those things up, you better get right with Jesus, the author of those values you keep expressing that keep getting you in trouble. And so that's when I began the process of trying to clean myself up and trying to recognize, you know, like, okay, the way to bring me down is with women, because you've shown no discipline there, and you're an idiot. And so it just made me start being very, very just cognizant, like, man, I need to be careful. And I can't just be running around here willy-nilly like I'm an idiot. I'm going to get destroyed by this. And so as I just had my eyes open to who my enemy was and whose team I was actually on, you know, I just leaned more into being a good teammate to Jesus Christ.
Well, that's a good story. I like that story. I like redemption stories, but I've appreciated your courage. And I, you know, you're referring to the fact, as you say, we're both 56 years old. You grew up, and what you're essentially saying, as I hear it, is that you absorbed more Christian values than you realized you did, you know, due to the influence of members of your family in your life, the culture that you grew up. I remember, Jason, when I was a young man, a black pastor in Fairfield, Alabama, who had a real influence on my life. And I remember he used to say this to me when I was a kid. He would say, boy, you're going to be dangerous for Jesus. So you're going to be dangerous for Jesus. And I bumped into him when I was in my early 30s. I hadn't seen him for maybe 10 years. And by then I was, you know, I was on the career path that I'm on now, and I was doing some public speaking and such. And he said, tell me, are you getting any invitations from black churches? And I said, no, I said, not at all. And I was, you know, he must have heard, you know, kind of the disappointment, you know, in my voice. And he said something that I've never forgotten. He said, Larry, don't let it hurt your feelings. He said, we're dealing with a whole separate set of issues than the white community. He said, you know, the kind of issues that you're addressing, atheism, Marxism, Islam, homosexuality, this sort of thing. So these are just not major issues in the Black community. Now, that was 25 years ago, and that's changed. That's changed hugely. What has changed from the time that we were boys, young men? What has changed from the comments that he made to me then? I don't think he would say that to me now. What's happened?
I think, no disrespect to that minister, but I think was a lot like me, that he's just asleep at the wheel and not realizing what was going on 25 years ago. And so all of those issues that he's talking about were in play they were in play 60 years ago. Again, at an uncomfortable conversation that the Black church is avoiding is like MLK's legacy and MLK's relationship with Marxist ideology and his influence by, you know, out and out communist, and what that did to Black people and faith and their relationship with Christianity. And so all those things were evident 25 years ago. They've been evident for 50, 60 years. And so I don't think anything's changed. I just think the problems have metastasized and become so obvious that we can no longer ignore them.
So they just weren't being addressed openly. They were kind of an open
undiagnosed
secret.
Just undiagnosed, unaware. And Voddie Baucham, I don't want to take credit for this, but Voddie Baucham in a sermon once talked about how, and this is what I would have told you 25 years ago, or whenever this guy had the conversation with you, you know, if I was as bright as Voddie, I would have told you that any sermon that's preached from the word, it plays in every zip code on the planet. There are no specific sermons for specific zip codes. If anytime you're preaching something in one zip code and you go, well, it really wouldn't work in this neighborhood, that means you're really not preaching the word. And so,
well said. Well said.
And so that's, you know, I think the minister well intentioned, but thinking that, you know, we're dealing with different issues than other believers or other image bearers is just totally wrong. We have an idolatry issue in American culture, in world culture, but it's most acute here in America. Idolatry, racial idolatry, or food idolatry, or sexual idolatry, skin color idolatry, gender, all of this other stuff, all these identities and all these things we place above our relationship with Jesus Christ are destroying all of us, all of it, Black, white, green, yellow, whatever. They've tricked us into embracing everything except our identity in Christ. And that's why so many of us run around trying to, I'm unapologetically Black. I'm unapologetically conservative or liberal, or I'm unapologetically Mexican or whatever it is. And really, if we really were right with God, we would say, I'm unapologetically a Christian. I'm here to obey and serve my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And that's the only identity we need. And if we did that, watch how many of our problems would disappear. But instead, you know, we've got all these idols and we want to go out and be the best lover of women or the best lover of Ronald McDonald's. Me and Ronald McDonald used to be best friends, and it's killing me. And I had to do, I had to quit and just, you know, and so I would, you know, I think that minister, if he's humble or whatever, he'd be humble enough to say, yeah, man, I was wrong and I didn't know what I didn't know at that
time. Well, listen, he is a great guy and somebody who had a tremendous influence on my life. And to put that in full context, I remember him concluding that statement by saying to me, "Larry, I'm just trying to hold families together in my church." He says, "I'm just trying to hold families together in my church. I barely have time to address, you know, ideas that are, you know, up here." He says, "I'm in the weeds every day, just dealing with trying to hold families together, kids with their parents."
It's true what he's saying, Larry. The only thing that I think, and sometimes this, you have to have the ability to do this. And I'm not knocking the guy's ability because he's probably doing the best that he can. But you have to have the ability to connect all the dots because the thing, Marxism. And
absolutely.
Is
without a doubt
why the family is being destroyed. And so,
yeah, as we've discussed on your show, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Intersectionality, all these kinds of things are very real, and the dots indeed do connect. And in fact, I have been, you know, for listeners of this particular podcast and in my own writing, I have been seeking to connect the dots for people, you know, in their heads that they can see that there is a connection between the kind of conversations that are taking place in Davos at the World Economic Forum and where I've just come from. I've just come from, you know, Central and South America, where I've been tracking migrants who are going through the Darien Gap. And it is absolutely a massive human crisis. And I want people to see the two are related because you have these people who are flying in their private jets and lecturing us all on our carbon footprint and are talking about how wonderful it'd be for there to be open borders. And meanwhile, you have people who are being eaten. You know, I'm talking to them. People are being eaten by jaguars, who are being raped, who are being murdered, who are being trafficked as they're trying to make their way to the United States. All of this is connected. And it comes right back to what you're saying, the breakdown of the family, black, white, Hispanic, across the board. This is a very deliberate effort to destroy the family.
Just think about, and again, the minister and people at churches, they're talking to people that it's hard for them to grasp. But what you have to be able to understand, the WEF, and their ESG, and their forcing of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yep.
So that's all Marxist theory. And so now corporations are forcing diversity, equity, inclusion throughout their entire deal. And so in order for you to survive at work, you have to start talking Marxist theory and believing in Marxist theory if you want to move up in leadership positions in corporate America. And you have to start thinking about, well, and because they build this into the contracts of the top executives. If you have so many blacks, gays, and women in positions of power, your bonus will be X, Y, and Z. This has been commonplace in the newspaper industry throughout my entire 30-year career, that editors would get rewarded not based on, you know, the talents of the people they hire, but do they meet these certain quotas? And so that starts changing your mentality. If you have to survive, if you have to be a leftist at work in order to survive and to feed your family, you think that leftism isn't going to come home with you at night? You think it's not going to change your thinking? And now all of a sudden, instead of looking at people as image bearers of Christ and removing these petty surface level differences, we've now made them front and center. We start, well, are you gay? Are you black? Are you a black woman? Are you this and that, instead of just evaluating people on merit? And so the things that are coming from way on high from the World Economic Forum are having enormous impact on the ground level for a factory worker. My brother, a college educated, was an executive at one of the major car manufacturers in America, historic car manufacturer in America. And he could feel it. Like, they put him on all these diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and all this stuff. And they started making him talk about things that were inconsistent with his values, and he would be celebrated for it, and he would be valued for it. And, you know, a bunch of reasons why he ended up retiring a little bit early, but part of it was just like, man, this, because again, my brother spent 10 years in the military. He's got some strong, the same strong values I got. And he could just feel the pressure from this major auto manufacturer trying to push him away from his values. So he retired. Part of the reason.
Well, you know, ESG is the corporate equivalent of what DEI is for individuals. It's the new Nazi armband. It may be a rainbow flag, or I don't know what imagery is on it, but it is symbolically, it's the same thing. You will tote the water for the left, or you will be unemployable. And this is what they're seeking to do, and hence the reason they have to be resisted. Which brings me to Kim Mulkey, the somewhat embattled. I think she's fought quite well on her own behalf. But the coach of the LSU women's basketball team, they lost in the Elite Eight round. But here she was being attacked. For those who aren't aware, she's quite open in her position. She's she's a you know, she's a bit of a firebrand, and she doesn't mind speaking her mind. And she knew that a piece was coming out in the Washington Post attacking her coaching style, and apparently some players who were disgruntled and this kind of thing. And then you have another piece that came out in the LA Times, which called them, what was it? You know, something like trailer trash or debutantes.
Dirty debutantes, which is the name of a porn series. Yeah. Called them dirty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically calling them dirty whores, and the LA Times ended up coming out and apologizing for that, but she came out swinging. And I wonder what is it that you think specifically about her has attracted the ire of the left? My own guess is this: as somebody who hasn't followed her as closely as someone like you would have as a sports writer, but in that WashPo piece, there was this, that she had told her players that your sexuality does not need to be anybody else's business. You know, basically don't wear that out in public. Keep that private. People don't want to know. They're not interested. She didn't say that you couldn't be homosexual. She didn't say you couldn't be transgender. Nothing like that. She just said, keep that crap to yourself. We're not interested in it here. And to me, because that is what is defining the left these days. You cannot speak of faith. You speak of faith, you're going to lose your job, or at least you're going to be at the center of a controversy. But you must speak of your sexuality, particularly if it's of a perverse nature that the left embraces. What do you think?
Well, a little bit of trend. Obviously, but I've known Kim Mulkey for about 20 years. And at one point, we were friendly, and I still consider her a friend. And I feel like I could call her, ask her for anything. She could get it. She'd give it to me. So want to say that. I also know the writer at the Washington Post. I used to work with him at the Kansas City Star. His name's Kent Babb. And have some respect for Kent Babb. Having said that, the article was a hit piece, and Kim Mulkey got out in front of it, and she's being demonized because the left has so much hostility for heterosexual Christian Americans, and they don't want her at the top of women's college basketball, particularly as it ascends in relevancy. Their preference is for Don Staley, the South Carolina head coach, who is, from all understanding, she's part of the Alphabet team. She plays the race card repeatedly and unfairly. Don Staley is on message, and she's, I believe, won two national championships at South Carolina. They've anointed her as the greatest coach in women's college basketball and put her alongside Mike Krzyzewski in all these prominent commercials about college basketball. They've ignored Gino Auriemma, who's at Connecticut and has won like 11 national titles. He can't be the face of women's college basketball. One, he's a man, and two, I believe he's heterosexual, but you know, all of that. And then so it would be Kim Mulkey. She's got four national titles as a head coach. I think she's got two as an assistant, one as a player. Her resume exceeds Don Staley's resume. But they want to destroy Kim Mulkey because, again, she doesn't fit the profile. She's got traditional beliefs. That the thing you're talking about with the players and saying, hey, keep your private life private. She's telling them this while she's coaching at Baylor University, a religious school, a school that tells you up front, hey, here's what we stand for. This won't, again, it's not that they put out big flyers, but this won't be a haven for LGBTQ basketball players. This is Baylor University. We're a religious school. We have these values. And so Kim Mulkey's coaching there for 20 years, and she's telling the players, like, hey, do what you're going to do, but this ain't really the place to wear your homosexuality on your sleeve. This is Baylor. And, you know, it's good advice for any 18, 19, 20-year-old kid. Keep your private life private. Don't wear, whether it's heterosexuality, all kids need to. They're telling kids at Baylor, hey, don't have sex, even if it's heterosexual sex. Wait till you're married. That's the message, and it's a proper message. But, yeah, they've demonized Kim Mulkey for it and have tried to make her the villain of college basketball because she stands up for old traditional values and she tries to disciple young women into being women and wearing their femininity as strength, not wearing male masculinity as strength. She wanted the girls to present themselves like girls and young women. That is part of the reason why she dresses so flamboyantly on the sidelines. She wants everybody to know there's a woman over here coaching this team. There's a woman over here leading this team. Make no mistake about it. I'm a woman, and I like being a woman.
I want to encourage everyone to join our newsletter. That's join.larrytaunton.com. Now, why is that important? Well, because it helps us to maintain contact with you apart from Big Tech. So whenever there's a new interview, a podcast, a video short, a live, we have the ability to contact you directly without going through Big Tech. So you can join that by going to join.larrytaunton.com. By the way, did you happen to see, I saw it briefly last night, the singer, Colombian singer Shakira's comments about the Barbie movie.
I did see it, and it was kind of surprising. She'll probably get some blowback for that, being in the music industry.
Yeah, I suspect she will. The comments were interesting. That what you just said about Kim Mulkey resonates with that, because Shakira had said, for those who are not familiar with this, she said that her boy saw the film and hated it. And she went on to say, I think women should be feminine. And I think men should be masculine. I think we have traditional roles to fill. And honestly, if you were to just take her comments and didn't know who it was who had said it, you would say, this sounds like something that might have come from a pulpit. You know what I mean? It was quite traditional and true. And I was surprised as well, because I thought she's such a massive pop star. They're going to have to put pressure on her to get her back into line one way or another, to say, no, you cannot break from this. You cannot be off the reservation with these kind of comments. A last subject I want to bring up with you, Jason. It is often alleged that Donald Trump is gaining ground among black voters. Do you believe this is true? I'm very skeptical of this.
No, I'm not skeptical of it. I think that particularly among Black men, that the results are so devastatingly, overwhelmingly negative about our blind support of the Democrat Party, that you have no choice but to, hey, what am I doing here? You know, hey, I'm on a diet, but I keep eating this McDonald's and I'm not losing any weight. At some point, you just change up your diet. You say, I'm going to quit going to McDonald's. That's what happened to me like 2.5 years ago. I just said, I just can't go to McDonald's anymore. I'm not getting the results. I'm on this treadmill. I'm on this. And so I think that is finally happening for a lot of Black men in particular. I think that it's become so obvious that the Democrat Party has aligned Black people with the LGBTQ crowd, that I think a lot of Black people are really uncomfortable with that. There's like, well, how did we become, our plight become completely connected to the Alphabet Mafia group? That's odd, and I think that's making people reconsider.
Well, they co-opted the civil rights movement.
Yes. And so I do think it's real. Whether or not it's going to show up in big numbers at the poll, I don't know. Just be, you know, in the voting booths, because, you know, I'm still leery about what's going to happen in 2024 as it relates to the voting booth because of all the shenanigans that I felt went on in 2020. And I think
I agree with that.
A mail-in votes, and I know that that's been stopped a lot of places, but yeah, I do think, just in my conversations with my friends, you know, you used to not be able to bring up Donald Trump without sparking an argument. Now you can bring him up and it doesn't start some kind of major argument. And I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking about with Black guys. Black women are really loyal to Joe Biden. Black women fantasize about being the next Ketanji Brown Jackson or the next Kamala Harris. You know, it's... But for Black men, yes. And to be quite honest, I think there's a lot of Black women, particularly ones who are married and who are believers, who are like, man, we got to do something different. And we got to quit going for this Donald Trump okie doke and pretending like Donald Trump is the leader of the KKK. You know, you can only do that cosplay for so long.
What do you think of Donald Trump selling $60 God Bless America Bibles?
Wasn't a fan of it. Wasn't a fan of it. Particularly the timing. The day his stock goes public and he's, you know, maybe getting past his financial problems. Wasn't a fan of it. But I hate to do this because I hate to go what about. But I got to go what about. When Joe Biden turns around a few days later and puts out a proclamation about Transgender Day of Visibility.
I'm
just like, hey, man, if this guy wants to sell Bibles, that's so much better than Transgender Days of Visibility that I just, whatever I was bothered about a few days earlier, it all went away. And it just, Joe Biden reminded me why I can't stand him.
I couldn't agree with you more. Who goes first in the NFL draft?
No clue. And I say that in all sincerity. I don't know.
What do you think of Caleb Williams?
Not a lot. I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. he and his nail polish and wearing a dress and crawling up in the stands, crying in his mom's lap. He's not a leader of men. He's not a leader of men. And I still think, you know, 75% of the guys in the NFL locker room want to be led by men. Now, they've certainly manipulated 25%, but I just don't think that doesn't go very far. And, you know, if he had Cam Newton's physical talents, it's like Cam Newton got away with being a quirky, silly individual when his talent was.
He was a freak in nature.
Yeah, when his talent. But once his talent quit being outrageous, Cam Newton couldn't get away with all that extra stuff that he likes to do. so it won't work for Caleb Williams. He's too small and doesn't have the right temperament to be a leader.
I agree with you, Jason. Jason, it has been a pleasure having you on Ideas Have Consequences. I really appreciate you joining me.
Larry, thank you for having me.
Take care, brother. This has been another episode of Ideas Have Consequences with me, Larry Alex Taunton.